Bulldog Live here on the Pulse at 1-866-823-1077. Oh, man who's been known to be sharp-dressed himself, Republican presidential candidate Andy Martin. And it was just December of, well, not, I wouldn't say last year now. I'd say 2 years. It was December of 2009, was it? Or no, December of 2010. Yeah, December of 2010. Andy Martin kicked off the New Hampshire Republican presidential primary right here on this show with announcing that he was going to run for president. And he's outlasted quite a few people with bigger names and bigger money. So, Andy, good to see you again.
It's good to see you. I don't feel 2 years older, so we can probably say, you know.
It was a little over a year ago, technically.
One year and change. We could use an urbanism there.
Well, you know, I mean, if you talk about something that happened 2 weeks ago, you're talking about last year. You know, it's crazy, but that's all right.
I can't imagine just how quickly it's gone. It seems like just yesterday we were sitting here in the studio and I said, I'm going to run. And it's been a great race. I mean, we're out there campaigning. We're out there battling this insanity that is now spreading, this chicken flu virus that's in the Republican Party. And it's terrible. But we're doing our job. I'm doing my job, which is to try and inject an antidote of sanity into the primary. I mean, you've got Rick Santorum, who's promising to start a war with Iran, saying he's going to bomb another country and send the troops back again.
Right. We just got out of Iraq.
We're still in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich says basically the same. I mean, it's this either or. Either they do what I tell them or I bomb them. Well, they're not going to do what we tell them. They're a sovereign nation of 70 million people. So, you see, I represent the sane middle of the Republican Party. On the one hand, you have the insanity of Ron Paul that wants to shut down the Department of Defense and issue pitchforks and pop guns to everybody to defend the country. And on the other hand, you have the mad bombers, Gingrich and Santorum. And in between there, in the middle, is a sane foreign policy which protects our interests but doesn't just swagger around and say, you do what I tell you, boy, or I'm going to bomb you.
Right.
So it's insanity. And you know, and we're very free, by the way, with Israeli blood. And these are all people that get up in these Jewish organizations and they'll say, oh, I'm for Israel. And how many Israeli soldiers can you afford to kill or have killed this time? Because obviously starting a war and using the Israelis as our foot soldiers is going to just wreak havoc. So we have to come to a peaceful resolution. We can use both hard power and soft power. When the Ayatollah said they were going to blockade the Straits of Hormuz, we said, the U.S. Navy is going to keep it open. Mm-hmm. That's hard power.
Right.
There are planes.
And that's
there.
Kind of what we're doing right now, too,
that's
by
right.
sending an aircraft
that's right.
carrier out
that's
there.
That's right. We're backing up our policy with guns, but we're not shooting them off like a bunch of teenagers on a turkey shoot. Did you ever see a bunch of kids that get guns for the first time? Boom, 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 boom. You know, and this is what you have in the foreign policy of a Santorum. He says he's got the most foreign policy experience, but it's all crazy. I mean, he was one of the architects of this insane invasion of Iraq. $4 trillion right. in tax dollars, which we've all passed on to our children and grandchildren quite nicely. They say 5,000 approximately killed, a little bit less than that. But they never really, they tell you wounded. But wounded, you can get a Purple Heart just for getting a fairly minor scratch in battle. They're fairly liberal with that.
Yeah, here we go, I'm talking about John Kerry again.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, John Kerry, yeah, we could swift boat him a little bit. But you can, but it can also mean that you lost a couple of arms or a couple of legs.
Right.
Or there was a story about, well, this post-traumatic stress syndrome is a serious matter. Today, we treat it seriously. You can't go out year after year, deployment after deployment, killing people and living under this tension without stress. Now, different people have different breaking points. You can see some guys that can kill for years and it doesn't bother them. You know, that's what's the, I think it was the movie Heart of Darkness, where the colonel is in the mountains somewhere or in the Delta. Other people get in a battle and the guns start going off and the enemies are, you know, within sight and they just lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't start a war casually. You don't send kids to die, men and women, and it's women today too because they're in the front lines. Let's not kid ourselves about women don't have combat MOSs or specialties with to carry a gun. Everybody carries a gun, and everybody comes under fire.
Mm-hmm.
You don't start a war, and you don't bomb a nation. Now, I think the approach that's being taken by my nemesis. Now, I don't happen to like Senator Mark Kirk. I'm no admirer of his. But I would, at least insofar as sanctions are concerned, I would work with Mark Kirk on this one and his co-sponsor on the Democratic side. I think we can bring down the regime with sanctions if they're really hard-nosed. And we can bring down the regime even if Obama doesn't want to do it.
They would have to be really tough sanctions.
Yes.
We see basically history doesn't really, sanctions don't work.
Well, the lollipop sanctions are just lollipops. But shutting down any intercourse between the United States and any country that does business with the central bank in Iran would be devastating to them. They'd be out of business in 90 days without firing a shot. And they know that. That's why they're saber rattling.
Okay.
And why they might provoke a military incident. Now, if Iran were to fire on us,
then we have to respond.
Then we have to respond. <You know? laughs> That's not a decision I would even bother with. I would just delegate it to the field commander. You're under fire, nuke them, so to speak.
Well,
I'm not saying use nuclear weapons,
no,
but you know, I mean, I would mean nuclear quotation marks response. Hit the sites, hit the air bases, hit the rocket launchers, and just clear the field. But for us to go and attack them and constantly be threatening them, all that we're doing, the biggest cheerleaders for the Ayatollahs are found in Washington. Because the only national unity that Iran has arises out of its enmity with the United States.
Okay. Well, no, it makes sense.
And then, of course, you know, you're Obama being a weak leader, and you know, having spoken to me now for, 5 years, you know, he's no commander in chief. He's hiding under the desk in the Oval Office. He doesn't even want the sanctions. He says they don't bind him. Well, they ought to bind him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, only Congress can declare war. And
what
they want to do is start a war and bomb a country without a declaration of war. But sanctions would work if they're tough enough. And that's where I come in. I've been to Iran. I was there during the hostage crisis. I understand Southwest Asia, Southeast Asia, the Middle East and the crossroads there, Afghanistan. I've been in all these countries. I know them. I didn't go, by the way, like John Huntsman, like a big shot wearing a striped pants and a morning coat as the ambassador, surrounded by a whole bunch of hangers-on. I went there alone to work and to observe and to analyze. So my experience with those countries is direct. It's personal. It's up front. It's intimate. And I don't think we're getting anywhere other than supporting the Ayatollahs with these threats. I mean, imagine if you're in Iran and you hate your government.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear all these guys in Washington, the Santorums and the Gingriches, let's bomb the Iranians. Well, you say to yourself, hey, Mohammed, they're going to bomb us too.
Yeah,
it's right out of the Bible. The rain falleth on the just and the unjust. So whether you're for or against the Ayatollahs, you're going to get bombed.
Right, exactly.
Now, most people, I think, could say, look, thank God the Americans are going to shut down the central bank. That'll give us a chance to kick the mullahs out. But not even an anti-government Iranian can endorse bombing of his country. I mean, that to me is an extreme act. And
usually actions like that is what unifies them against their attacker.
Exactly. And so we need to use smart diplomacy. We've got the weapons in place if we need to use them. If we're fired upon, we can certainly defend ourselves. And like I say, I would even tell the whatever the formal name is, the commander out there in that area, if you're fired on, don't call me, I'll call you. You handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Go get them. But I certainly wouldn't just keep on these threats. Well, we'll let the Israelis bomb them. And this, it's like saying I'm going to let my kid brother go out and start a fight. I mean, what is this? This is insanity. You know, with friends like Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum, Israel doesn't need enemies because they get to the same point. They're dragged into a war. They're told to bomb a country that's 10 times bigger. And where do they come out ahead on this?
Yeah, and I think George W. Bush played this game a little bit too, in looking at that, basically say, well, Israel can do whatever it wants, you know. And
that's the
you know,
Ron
we,
Paul
we,
approach,
we lean
by
on
the
him.
Way.
Yeah, well, but George W. Bush was doing it differently. He was kind of leaning on them behind the scenes, saying, wink, wink, and a nod. Yeah, it's not really us that's pushing for this, but if you did it, oops, oh well.
But you know what I think there? I think actually George W. Bush and his foreign policy team leaned against it.
Well, they
publicly,
did in the end.
Publicly,
yes.
They appeased.
But they would have let them do it if Israel said, hey, we're going to do it. He's like, okay, well, we can't stop you.
Well, actually, my understanding is that the Department of Defense said, we're not going to let you do it, and we're not going to facilitate it.
Okay.
You see, there is this disconnect between common sense and sanity and politics. And you get votes and support by saying ridiculous, extreme things about what you're going to do in the Middle East and bombing people. But that's insane. It's not in our national interest. And by the way, it's not in the Israelis' national interest. I mean, it's great to be tough and let's go get them an old blood and guts when it's somebody else's blood and guts that you're spending. But they're not anxious to die for their country, nor should they.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we haven't learned a thing from the mess in Iran. We went in there and killed 100,000 people. Most of them were civilians.
You mean in Iraq?
In Iraq, excuse me, I apologize. And we then woke up one morning, I got to Baghdad, and they were afraid to send their own general into Baghdad. General Garner, who was supposed to take over, they booted him out because they didn't think he was mean enough and nasty enough and hostile enough. And they ended up with a clown, Paul Bremer, which, as you know from reading my stuff, was totally unprepared for what he was doing. And, and he brought in these, what I call the pasty-faced weenie wing of the Republican Party, these 20s and 30-somethings that wanted to write laws about antitrust and franchise restrictions on cell phone towers.
Sure.
And we ended up with a country now that's a tinderbox that could be ignited at any time by sectarian violence. And we accomplished nothing in terms of our interest. Are the Iraqis potentially better off? I would say they probably are. We cleaned out Saddam and his bloodthirsty murderers, but at what cost to ourselves?
Exactly. Well, as somebody said yesterday, I was having a conversation with him off the air, and I said, yeah, well, you know, we're done in Iraq. He goes, yeah, we didn't win that, did we?
Well, you see, there's a difference between the soundbite and the 30-second answer that these guys love to give and the reality that we need an adult in the Oval Office. We don't have an adult now. I think at some point George Bush became an adult. See, he came in as Mr. Texas swagger, you know, and we bring it on and mission accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
At some point in there, the wisdom descended on him that maybe his advisors had betrayed him, that maybe they had allowed. I think that history will deal.
Well, he could have been hoodwinked. You know, you can make that argument.
I think
although
history,
he knew he wanted to go into Iraq. Yeah, you know, we knew that early on.
Who predicted that?
You were the first.
I was the first. But I think you see that. History will be slightly more gentle with George Bush than his adversaries because he was candid that he didn't have any foreign policy experience. I mean, if I went in and made a mistake, I couldn't say, gee, I didn't know where Iran was.
That's why he surrounded himself with Colin Powell, Dick Cheney, and the like, all the Persian
Gulf
War
hawks,
heroes.
The bombers, the mad bombers, as we can call them, in the Republican Party, they prevailed. And Colin Powell was too much of a weenie to just say no or quit. I'm very sorry. I have the highest respect for President Bush, and I love him deeply as a commander-in-chief, but I will not lend my name to a policy that I think is insane. Might have been able to stop it.
Hmm.
But I think history will find that he was betrayed and that he really relied on people that took advantage of his credulity, I think is the word I want, credulousness,
okay.
By following their advice, and then they created this mess. And you know, we could be on the cusp any day. I mean, I read the online newspapers and, of course, I read the print edition. Any day, it wouldn't surprise me if a war broke out in Iraq between the Shiites and the Sunnis and the Kurds. And you had the Iranians pouring over their border with Iraq, and you had the Saudis and some of the others pouring over the border with support from their side into a real bloodbath. And we accomplished nothing. You see, did American men and women sacrifice? God, we can't be more proud of these people. They are as great a generation as the greatest generation. I think it's wrong to just take one generation and say, well, they're the greatest. our men and women were just as great, just as honorable, just as committed, just as brave, and followed the policies and the plans that we gave them just as well as the World War II generation. But in World War II, we had a simplistic situation because we had mm-hmm. Nazi Germany. And here we had people that were perhaps as evil as Nazi Germany, but didn't pose an immediate threat to the vital interest of the United States. And, you know, I'm the guy that's coming along and saying we need sanity in the Republican Party. And there's a culture of hate that's now spreading. You've got a candidate who says, I will not reject support from the Ku Klux Klan. I will not reject support from neo-Nazis or white supremacists. What's wrong with this country? What's wrong with my party? I'm a conservative. I thought we resolved the fact that the Constitution allowed civil rights to be protected by the Constitution for every American, for every human being. And, you know, Ron Paul's crackpot scheme that property trumps the Constitution. Property is only one of the rights that exists.
Slaves were considered property at one time.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, his freedom is somebody else's slavery. But to say that property is the only right that the government is there to protect is wrong, because human rights are, among them, mm-hmm. property, the right to hold property. But it is not the only right. The right to worship is, and, of course, the right to life, to live, whether we're dealing with abortion and the issues there. We talk about, we don't talk of it as a property right, but it's a right that comes under one of the rights. And the right to live a peaceful life and go and ride a bus in interstate commerce and walk into a public accommodation and order a meal. Ron Paul doesn't think the law protects that. And where did we get a crackpot racist like this? This little old man that runs around saying, well, property is everything and I have a right to lock you out. And it's crazy.
All right. Well, Andy Martin, Republican candidate for president. So you are in New Hampshire. You're going to be in Concord this afternoon. College Convention 2012 is underway.
We're making our headquarters in Concord from now to Election Day. We'll be going up north and campaigning literally from one end of the state to the other. But like I say, I am the voice of sanity in the Republican presidential primary, and that's what I bring to the table. I don't care what the other candidates say in the way of crackpot proposals to start new wars or to go back to segregation and Jim Crow and claim that's property. That's not America, and that's not the kind of country that most Americans want. And I want the Republicans to win, and I want to replace Barack Obama in the Oval Office. And right now, most of these clowns that are running in the presidential primary don't have a prayer of a chance.
Well, you spent a long time studying Barack Obama, doing the psychological profiles and the like. But before we let you go, I want to give you your website address. And also, people who have been watching WMUR this week probably saw the half-hour program that you produced.
Yes, we broadcast it the first time on New Year's Day at 1 o'clock. It's running at 1:05 a.m. right after Jimmy Kimmel. It's a 30-minute show. It's a historic program. It's the first time that a presidential candidate has ever run a 30-minute show. Lay out his views in detail. Mm-hmm. They're not sound bites. They're not 60 seconds or 30 seconds. They're not dark colors on and old pictures and little shaking visual images. It's just me talking to the people of New Hampshire, talking to the American people, explaining what I believe and who I am and why I'm qualified, and actually, in my own case, more qualified than the opposition.
Well, in that, too, because I saw parts of it, you get into the issue of Social Security and Medicare, so anybody who's interested in that may want to watch that and see what your thoughts are on it. Your website?
AndyMartinForPresident.com.
All right, Andy Martin, the first one to announce, outlasted a few others, been running campaign ads here on this station for several months now. So, Andy, good to see you again. Good luck. And people want to see you, head on over to the Grapponi Center.
Yes, we'll be there. Our headquarters is there. We're there to meet with voters. But we're also fanning out across the state. And we're basically going to be everywhere between now and primary day. We've got to take the Republican Party back from the extremists, the mad bombers on one end, and the appeasers and the surrender people, and the let's go back to the happy days of slavery with old man River, in the case of Ron Paul. We come back to the middle ground of America. This is what America is about: privacy, prosperity, freedom, but all with respect and comedy with our neighbors.
All right, Andy Martin for president.com. Bulldog Live continues on the Pulse.